Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, everybody? It's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt from the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, and I'm coming to you with a Run Past Your Kick episode. We're going to have a lot of these coming up this fall, for stick with us, check back with us, but we've got a very, very special guest, and I'm a, you know, many of you guys who know and follow the show know that I'm a teacher, I'm a coach, and I love to see young people excel at what they do, and that's why I love meeting our next guest in person at Dogtown this summer. Got a chance to meet his folks, and after having met them, it only reaffirmed what I know to be true, which is the fact that good kids are produced, good young adults are produced because they have good, great parents. And having met his family, Rick Rose's family is a great group. I love meeting them. But Rick, welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. This should be a lot of fun. It's been a while since we were hanging out on the field last Chicago game, so it's good to see you again.
It's good to see you too. And he and I spoke about what his offseason plans were. He's back in Ohio. He's getting strong, keeping his fitness up. Are you getting a chance to play any rugby in this, you know, fall season?
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the tenets of staying sharp in the offseason is just keeping the ball in your hand. And, mm-hmm. You know, at least as I found, get in contact where you can. So I've been playing around with the Cleveland Rovers just here local, you know, giving tips where I can in the lineout and everything. And it's been a lot of fun, you know, keep the ball in hand and find some contact situations, which always keep you sharp.
Right. Are the Rovers, are they, and I'm not familiar, it's kind of a little east of, in the Midwest, kind of, we play the Wolfhounds. We get some crossover when you get into the late fall season and a tournament season. What level is that? Are the Rovers at?
They're D3. They play all the Midwest teams there. But okay. And you know, me and a few buddies local played with them at St. Bonaventure and Ignatius. Actually, a few of them are down there, and we're having a lot of fun with it.
Good. Yeah, so you gotta have fun while you're playing your trade. Otherwise, it becomes too much work. Let's talk a little bit about that CV for those that don't know. As I mentioned before, Rick is from Medina, Ohio, went to St. Ignatius Prep, played for the Celtic Elite Rugby Club, Cleveland Rugby Academy 7, St. Bonaventure University, was an NCAA All-American, played in the Collegiate Rugby Shield in Utah, I guess it would be two seasons ago, played for the Canyons, Atlantic Coast Team Selects, went to the World University Rugby Invitational in Bordeaux, France. I'm sure he didn't have any wine. And then he was a number one selection in the 2023 MLR draft to the Miami Sharks. Whew. Young guy, but a heck of a long CV.
No, thank you. I mean, most of that is just right place, right time. But
yeah, but it's so it's like kind of like luck, you know. At some point, luck just becomes all about hard work and keeping your nose to the grindstone and keeping after it, and you make it, making your own luck, making all those things happen for yourself, which I love. But folks, we're going to get into the run, pass, or kick episode. And before we do, let me explain it for those who are uninitiated. I'm going to throw some questions at Rick. I'm going to prompt each question with run, pass, or kick. He's going to let us know what he's going to do. If he wants to run with a question, he's going to go ahead and answer it. If he wants to pass a question, he's going to let it go. Doesn't want to get in trouble with coaches or with Lucas or anybody else in the Sharks staff. Or he's going to have a little fun with me, make me work, and hit the kick, which is going to cause me to be on the defensive, and I'm going to answer the question in a way that I think he would answer it. So, Rick Rose, are you ready for the run, pass, or kick challenge?
I'm ready.
All right, we're going to get it going here in just one moment. All right. So we're back, Rick Rose, and we're going to start us off with the run, pass, kick episode. Like Scott thinks I'm crazy, and maybe I am, but I really like to get into the annals of social media for the folks that are joining the show. And I got to tell you, you're a tough nut. I mean, you really keep it pretty clean on your social media posts. So I had trouble, unlike your Ohio brethren, Chris Shade, the Shader, was doing some, he was clothed to his credit, but he was doing some slip and slide beer slides, I believe, in one particular video. It was outstanding, but that's how the Shader rolls. Nevertheless, I found this one interesting. So I found a photo from the archives, and I'm going to put it up here in just a moment. But my question, run, pass, or kick. Here we go. Your friend ever forgive you for continuing to fish while he was being dragged away by the rarely seen golden wolf in Ohio?
I'll say when the fish are biting, it's hard to keep your eye off of it. I didn't even know what was going on behind me. It could have been getting mauled by that golden wolf. But the largemouth were in that lake, and I was going to get them. So that was my main priority there.
Well, you got to keep that priority on the hook, so to speak. You can't let the golden wolves, unless they're getting to you, you just let it go and you keep on fishing on.
Anyone who fishes will know where I'm coming from there.
Yeah.
And they're biting.
For sure. Well, you got to come out my way. There's plenty of great places to fish. And, you know, whether it's Lake Michigan or whether it's some of the great lakes or rivers that we have in around here in Illinois, my co-worker I work next to, the other dean at my high school, is a big fisherman, so we can find you
that's right. Yeah,
you come out west. All right, next question that we got lined up for Rick Rose, again from the Miami Sharks, and this one gets a little bit more serious, and I asked this question because in part I associate with it. Your dad played rugby for Beacon Hill Rugby Club in Boston. So run, pass, or kick, what sort of things did he do to engage you in the sport?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always love talking about this whole part of my dad playing back in the 70s in Beacon Hill in Boston. He played football as well. He played college football, high school football, the whole lot, lots of baseball. So he had a pretty good understanding of the sports I was playing when I was young. And throughout the whole time, he always said, you know, if you get a chance, rugby's seriously fun. You know, you can be fit, you can run all day, make hits and play offense and defense. And, you know, that sounds so awesome. When I was coming to the decision in the beginning of high school of what I wanted to play, he always had his jerseys, or maybe a cleats. And these are the old school cotton with the collar, long sleeve and everything, pinstripe. They're always really, really, really cool. Now I have them framed, but before high school, we made the pick. My mom and my dad both said, you know, give rugby a try. Just at least show up to a tryout. And, you know, I absolutely loved it then. I met all my buddies that I'd be friends with, you know, forever up till now on that day. So, I mean, It really was the right choice. But even now in my room, I still have his Beacon Hill jersey hanging up. And it's good to have someone in the house so I can, you know, talk about whatever's happened in the Pacific Nations Cup, whatever. I can show him a rugby clip and it's like, oh, cool. He gets it. He knows it. So, yeah.
So if you're listening, Preston Hammerschmidt, did you hear the wise words of this man over here? He has his dad's jersey hanging up in his room.
Oh, okay? Yeah.
So just so you know where it's at, kid. That's awesome. So what position did he play? Was he a lock as well? Or
he wasn't anywhere near the forwards. He didn't even look at the scrum. He was out in the back line making cool plays. No, I joke. He was a center, played some wing. He was a kicker when he played football too. So of course they had him throwing the boot around playing. But no, he was not as I wasn't as big as I was back then, but a lot speedier. So he was in the back line, and I still joke with him about how our positions differ and how we work so hard in the scrum where they hang out and get ready to make a cool play.
Right, they wave to all the ladies, and they have a clean jersey and everything else.
That's why, and
that's just it. Those backs didn't mind having those old school Canterbury jerseys with the collars and the long sleeves, right? Because even on a rain soaked day, you know, they would still stay pretty dry. But we get dirty and I'm getting 10 pounds of water in it, you know.
Especially in the old school 1970s rugby, there's a lot more tussling going on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And they didn't get the best pitches then either. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They had to play some farm fields or whatnot. But you mentioned you started playing in high school your freshman year, and then you continued to play and continued your career at the vaunted St. Bonaventure program. Run, pass, or kick, at what point did you think that you wanted to become a professional rugby player?
Yeah, of course I'll run with this one. It wasn't more than 2 years into St. Bonaventure when I came in contact with like my first major league rugby player and got to see a game. There was a few alumni of St. Bonaventure that went professional. There's three now. So I would see these guys, especially I would see Kyle Sikora and Eamon Matthews, these guys run into alumni weekends and all. And man, it was cool. You get to talk to them about, you know, of course we all had the dream of playing rugby as long as we could. Everybody on that team did. But to see the guys who were doing it, ask them how they felt about it, how their careers were going, and to hear, you know, positive, great reviews and hear the experiences they were having. I think it was about the end of sophomore year when I had met these guys and talked to them, like, man, that's definitely, if I could, this is the route I'm going to take. And it was never like a certainty, like, you know, especially my sophomore year of college, I didn't think I would have been able to do it, but it was always like, well, I'll work hard enough and be ready if the chance comes. And that was my main mindset. But those last 2 years of college, junior and senior year, were really when I was just uber focused on training and getting my body right if the opportunity arose. So it was those last 2 years that I really focused on it.
Yeah, you know, you strike a really important chord for rugby in the United States. And I think that's one of the things that I love about the MLR, at least as we've seen it in its first 7 seasons. I think it's going to continue for quite some time. Is the fact that you see these guys who are playing in the league going back to their college programs or going and giving back to college programs. You know, for you, seeing Kyle Sikora in there, who has now won a two-time MLR Shield champion, right? Guys, you know, here in Chicago, Mark O'Keefe and McLean Jones are coaching at Loyola University, so giving their time back to program. Patty Ryan's, coaching at New Trier High School. So these young guys like yourself are getting contact with the players that are playing currently in the league and can kind of get some insight into what that's like and how they can, as you say, better prepare themselves, get their body right, get their training regimen right, so that they can, you know, meet the demands that are expected of the MLR. So that's awesome to see. Obviously, you and your family had to have been excited being the number one pick overall by me. And before I get on to the next RPK question, I just want to ask you, can you recall where you were, who you were with, kind of what was going through your mind at that time as you were told, because last year worked a little bit, 2023 worked a little bit different than this year. You knew ahead of the draft that you were going to be selected number one. Now, take me through those moments behind the scenes.
Yeah, that was funny. I mean, so the I had no inkling of when I was going to go. I had a few calls with teams and stuff, so I knew I was going to end up somewhere. And then I got a call from Miami when I was on a run, not a week or so before it actually went down. It was super cool. That was like a team I was really like hoping to get in contact with. I would love to be on a new team, all this stuff. Got a call on that run. That was really exciting. I know the exact spot in Medina when I was running. It's my typical path where I go nowadays. And there's a bench and the fork in the path. And that's where I sat for the call. So I always like give like a little nod of like, you know, appreciation to the world that the whole thing happened every time I passed that bench. But it wasn't until everyone in the first round got flown down to do the whole production the day before. And we didn't know where we were going even when we showed up. So it wasn't until we were in the room, the cameras came on and everything, and we started it that I found out. It was at the moment I got called up was the first time I found out. So that was really cool. When I got back and I was on the plane, my parents were kind of trying to nudge out of me, like, when'd you go? And I tried to like hint that I, you know, went late in the first round or didn't even get drafted or something to my mom, just to, I don't know, get a rise out of her. But it was funny when we got to sit down and I asked them right before it started, like, when do you think I'm going? And they both said one, just because they're loving parents. I guess I didn't do a good enough job to convince them. But yeah, I was sitting on the couch. They announced it and I was, you know, a dream. So
now I got to ask, and again, I'll get to the RPK question in just a moment, but you know, it's interesting. You were sharing some of that time with some of the other highly rated picks, and you guys were in Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And you had the opportunity to play with some of them, you know, in the Shield Challenge. So, you know, what was that like? You know, all you guys knew you were highly picked, but didn't know in what order. Was there an opportunity to celebrate? Did you guys celebrate one another's successes? How did that go?
Yeah, totally. You know, it's funny, the group that I was there with, I've largely been playing with in one way or another and connected to up until today. It's a phenomenal group of guys that we went down there with. And we cheered hard. Whenever a name got called, we all knew we were going first round in there. So, you know, it didn't matter where you got. We were all super happy for each other just to be there. And then it's funny, after that happened, well, of course, I knew a lot of them at the Shield. I was roommates with one of them at the Shield, too, who's I'll talk about in a second. But we went there, and then we went the USA Development camp in Charlotte. Almost most of the people in that draft first round were there with me, so I got to hang out with them again. The second pick overall, Max Schumacher, was my roommate there. He was the man. We got on well there, played together. And then I played with Junior Gaffa, another draftee who's rookie of the year, been having an incredible year. I played with him at the USA camp, then in France, then against him at Charlotte. So it's super cool how this all ended up. But all my buddies, I see them on these top tackle lists, top carry. These are all my boys. And we met most of us at the Shield, if not there, then the draft, if not there, then the USA camp. So it was really cool.
And that may perhaps makes rugby special from most all other American sports, in that, you know, you frequently not just play against guys, but then it circles back where you get to play with them. And so, you know, you might throw an upper lip their way. You might, you know, get a little cheeky with them, but at the end of the day, it circles back and you're like, yeah, I hate playing against you, but I love playing with you. You know, one of those things. It's good to hear that you guys are getting on well, but here's the question. So going back to that draft, run, pass, or kick, the excitement has died down. Reality sets in, and suddenly you say to yourself, I'm going to be a Miami Shark next season. You know, what was going through your mind after all the celebration and stuff settled down? You know, take me through that. Give fans an idea of that suddenly when that realization hits, you got to be prepared to be a professional. What were you thinking?
Oh, I'll definitely run with that. That was an exciting time in life. Firstly, I was just doing the mental math of how much it was going to cost me in sunscreen to get fully through a season. I know it's going to be real red for a real long time. I'm still not 10 after the full season. So, of course, that was going through my mind how there was going to be a new culture. And that's not something I was, you know, scared of. It was something I was looking for. So super excited then. I got to meet guys from Uruguay, Argentina. I knew that was coming, and I was just super excited, you know, to have that opportunity. The other thing was, you know, I had been training real hard up until that point, but then as soon as that really happened, I was like, boy, I got to work even harder. And there's a huge mental, invigoration there once I got picked to really just get down to it and start moving, start being the best you can. And there was a lot of tough training days post-draft, pre-season camp. So, I mean, you love it. It's the stuff that you just love. But, I knew the work was going to be immense ahead of me. And it still is. That's the same thing I'm dealing with now. And it's a pleasure. It's a good thing to do, but it's work. So I really knew it was cool. Talked to all my buddies about it. Talked to my parents about it. Now it's time to shut up and just work hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the right mindset, right? Never feel, never get comfortable, and you always push yourself to new places and go to those dark places and get through them. So that's awesome. You know, I got to tell you, you got to talk to Alec McDonald. Did you guys take some Spanish classes together or something like that? Maybe share some of those online Spanish, Babbel? Maybe, yeah. Or one of those.
I wouldn't know. Me and Alec were the opposite. We loved being the Midwest connection. We were telling old jokes we heard on the job and stuff, and being as American and speaking as like the most English possible to each other. We would be hanging with all the Spanish speakers, and they could totally understand you, but you wouldn't throw some crazy jargon that you heard right 10 years ago from a weird uncle or something. Me and Alec were slinging it back and forth. It was awesome.
Cool. Well, and did you guys get a chance to go fishing together? Because he's a huge fisherman.
We would talk about it all the time. We went one time just down to the canal after we were having a barbecue and we were fishing for whatever, had one terrible little rod. We saw some blue crabs, or maybe not blue crabs, whatever they got down there. We were just talking about jumping in there for them and everything. And we didn't get to go fishing too much. You know, a lot of it, if you're going to do it from the beach, you have to have like a serious fishing rig cast it out 100 meters. We want to get on a boat one of these days. But we talked and reminisced about the walleye and the Great Lakes and this largemouth and the farm ponds and all that.
Listen,
yeah.
Make it a point to have AMAC take you to Table Rock Lake.
Okay. That's awesome. I got to talk to him about that.
Yeah. Don't forget, hit him up on that. Make him take you. Cause that good old boy, we saw him on the lake one time and he was casting a thread in the line, 24/7 right there. So
of course.
All right. So, let's talk about that first season, run, pass, or kick. What were the biggest learnings that you took away from this past season in 2024?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's been the highlight of my experience, was how different it was from the collegiate level and how big of a step it was from anything I had done prior. I really did just want to see rugby at the next level and see if I could do it. And, showing up even on day one with the other athletes that you're with, you start to realize the physicality is going to be crazy here. Even before we started hitting, I would see some guys just walking around. I'm like, okay, we're going to be hitting here. And I'd say absolutely the physicality was the biggest step up. Not necessarily in crazy, big blowout hits and stuff like this, but every time you touch the ball or every time you're involved, you're going to be hit. And that's just the name of the game. And support is immensely physical. The rucks around the rucks, messy physical, the gain line, of course, but it makes it more enjoyable when you have to go against that on offense. And we started running these beautiful layers and stuff like that. The game advances because it has to. And that was such a beautiful thing for me to see. Of course, the set piece. I'm a line out guy. I love the line out. And to be in a group with other guys who were also studying like it's a novel and all on these line outs. And I got a full notebook full. That was a real, real joy. And just to have it come out and be clean and set up a good offense. So, I mean, it's notable steps in every facet of the game. But physicality, that was the big one. I had a few hits, like the welcome to the league hits, if you will. And some of those first games I played where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a step up. I can really taste that one. But again, it was at every point where it got harder, it got more enjoyable, I felt.
That's great. And I mean, I didn't have your size, but I was forced forced to play lock, and I thoroughly enjoyed the line out. It's one of those things,
awesome.
Part of the game that I kind of, every time I went out, I tried to play the perfect game, knowing, of course, that I wouldn't play. And I wasn't, I was just a muddling D2 player that came to the game late. But I always wanted to have that game at the line out where I just owned it, where every time I went up for the ball, I was winning my own ball. I was being disruptive to the opposition. And so sometime I'm going to have to take a look at your playbook and just, behind the scenes, get an idea of what you guys do, because I just love good line out play. I think it's
awesome.
So important to a team's, obviously, to setting a platform for the backs, but more importantly, setting a platform to be able to outmaneuver the opposite pack, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's possession. That's the name of the game.
Right.
And the lineup, most beautiful way to gain possession, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100%. Well, one thing we know you didn't do a whole lot of your rookie season was go into the quick tap mode. We're gonna give you a chance here to quick tap. And for folks that don't know, it's basically in this part, to create a little fun and dynamicism in the interview. I'm gonna throw some statements at Rick, and he is going to have to pick one or the other. He can't pass, he can't kick, he's gonna have to run with each one of these. So we're gonna see if we can pin him into some choices here and make him pick a path. So with that, I've got five of them here. My first one kind of hits a little bit at the back of what we were talking about there. I think one of the things that was wonderfully consistent about your rookie season was you played all 16 matches in the Miami Sharks regular season. So better achievement for you, playing in all 16 matches or being the Miami Sharks Marcus Callaway nominee?
Playing all 16 matches, but that I think was part of the facet, because most of my nomination was just for being a good teammate. So I think playing everything and being around everybody for that long and just trying to be a good guy was led into that. So I think I couldn't have done that without this playing all 16.
Yeah. Well, what an honor, right? To be nominated as a rookie by your fellow teammates. And a lot of guys who had international experience, who had a lot of experience in the MLR. What an honor. So it says a lot about your character and who you are as a person. So congratulations.
Thank you.
You should be commended. All right, so we're going to have a little fun here. Better comfort food. So we're going to test you, Rick. Better comfort food, Slimen's corned beef. So you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm a corned beef connoisseur.
Okay. Slimen's corned beef or conch anything. So conch chowder. Conch fritters. So we're pitting Miami versus Cleveland, if you haven't figured that out.
Without a doubt, the corned beef. And I'm all for the Florida food. I'm all for the new experiences. Love me some seafood. But everybody makes fun of like Irish and English food, like Midwest food or whatever. It's awesome, and it puts meat on your bones. It's the best. Going with corned beef.
Nice. Good choice. Can't go wrong there. And I'm glad I got a well-known delicatessen that provides some of the best corned beef in the Midwest.
Awesome. That's right.
All right. Here we go. Better water weekend, freshwater or saltwater?
Freshwater. 100%.
All right. So 100%. Far, folks, you can take Rick Rose out of Ohio, but you can't take Ohio out of Rick
right.
Rose so far.
That's right.
Okay, here we go. We're going to continue down that road. Let's see where he goes with this one. And we're going to try to trip him up. Better dumpster fire, the Browns or the Dolphins?
Oh, well, there's a right answer, and there's the answer I'm going to give. Okay. I'm going to say the Dolphins. I'm not going to say any more after that.
Okay, fair dinkum. All right. And the last one, this one, no pressure. This one should be good, but I'm really interested here. Better Sharks jersey. Home, away, or city?
City, for sure. That's the one everybody wanted to find a way to take those shorts home after the game. I thought they were awesome. I thought our away jersey is really cool, but wearing that black in the heat, can't do it. You can't put on an all-black kit in 98 degrees, 10 UV index. Love the pink, but I thought the city jerseys were just a better play on the already good pink home jerseys.
100%. I really liked it. I mean, you know, the palm tree looked like, you know, in certain positions it might have been coming from a certain place that, you know, made everybody look better. But that's okay. That's okay. But yeah, the black jersey, I love the black jersey. So, you know, if you ever don't want to wear that, you know, it'll have a good home. right here in the Midwest. With that, folks, that was the quick tap. I hope you enjoyed it. Got a little insight to this Midwest man right here. Like I said, you can take him out of it, but you can't get it out of him. And we're going to continue with the run, pass, or kick and talk a little bit about that rookie season. As a rookie, the Miami Sharks selected you as their Marcus Callaway Community Impact nominee. So run, pass, or kick, how did service to others become part of your DNA? Where does that come from for Rick Rose?
Yeah, I'll run with it. You know, funny enough, when I described, if anybody asks, like, you know, what were you nominated for? Not that I even know for certain, but I think it was less service than, and more so just being a good guy, being a good teammate in ways that I could. It without a doubt comes from my mom and my dad too, but especially my mom, just how she interacts with people. It's, you know, she's never said a mean word in her life. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm, you know, the biggest service servitor of all time. I just try to be a pleasant teammate. A lot of where I got the most joy was being in the locker room and just, you know, accepting my role and befriending these legends, these guys who teach me so much. The guys in the lineup with me, Stan Vandenhoven and Ben Bonasso, just trying to be, you know, as agreeable as I could. And that doesn't always work. Sometimes there's a hot day of practice, you're working hard, and, you know, there's a little tension, but that's part of the sport. And you just got to be the guy who, my bad, was in the wrong, and keep going. So I think most of that was just trying to be agreeable and a reasonable, pleasant teammate. And, you know, I hardly think that's, you know, such an accomplishment, more so of just, you know, checking the boxes and being a good person on and off the field. But that was a tremendous honor for me to be nominated. And, you know, it's thanks to having a really pleasant coaching staff and fellow teammates. They make it all too easy.
Yeah, it's you mentioned coaching staff. I actually had a chance to catch up with Lucas, is it Coccarelli?
Coccarelli.
Yeah, and, okay. You know, we talked a little bit. I think he even talked to Coach Coach Pelicana a little bit about it. And I had said, you know, you guys have had a successful season. This is towards the end of the season. And he said, you think so? And I said, well, absolutely. I mean, the Miami Sharks were at a record of 6-10, didn't make the playoffs, were nipping at the heels all the way through. So run, pass, or kick. In your mind, was 2024 a successful season for the Miami Sharks?
I'll run with it. Yeah, I think based on what you say with Coach Pelicina, he was such a good manager of our mentalities going into the sports. I remember or going to the games. One of our wins against Utah, he had just an awesome, awesome speech in the locker room, just talking about be present and enjoy this moment. And it's stuff like that that I think got us gelled so quickly and on the field firing together so quickly when it happened. And I think you could take the season as, and I think this is how a lot of people would agree with, there were some tremendous successes and some evident lackings based on just being an early year. So I don't think it's so polarized as to say, yes, this was an excellent season, or no, this was not an excellent season. I think personally, I think it was great. But there were so much moments that we need and will improve upon. But, you know, I think you can take a lot out of the season and say, this shows great potential for our team. I think there were a lot of moments when we played on equal footing as teams that have been in the league for so long. And again, for me, that's such a testament to how we were led and how the whole thing was set up from the beginning of the season to in the locker room right before the game. We all had someone helping us unify our minds in the same goal. And, you know, so I think there was so many positives to be taken out and so many learning examples that we now know going forward. So I don't think there's a clear answer, but I think a lot of us were completely enriched by it.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. You guys beat a NOLA Gold team handily, a team that made it to the, you know, semifinals of the Eastern Conference. You took an early Hounds team and took them to the wire and really played them immense in your meetings with them. So you know, those are two playoff teams that you're right there with. And again, in the first season, I would dare to say that probably this team has had one of the best first seasons in MLR history for any team that's come to the league. You know, so it was a very successful season. You guys had a lot to be proud of, and there's a lot to build upon down there in South Beach. It's good to see. So, in my opinion, teams around the league could benefit from a summit, like an MLR summit. We just saw Dallas go and make the announcement that they're not going to be competing in 2025. And so, you know, I've advocated for folks that don't know, we have a blog, and one of the things I've said, I think there needs to be kind of an audit, and part of that audit by the league might incorporate a summit where some leadership in each of the teams get together and share some ideas about what they do well and what has led to success for them, and perhaps where they need to find some improvement, and almost, you know, share some things back and forth to help every team get a little bit better in what they do. And I'm not just talking about on the field, I'm mostly talking about off the field. So run, pass, or kick, what is something that other teams can learn from the Miami Sharks?
I'm going to run with it. That's a really good question. As you were saying that, I was kind of thinking in my mind relating to how I've seen teams who do one thing particularly well or another. And I think in the league, there's a lot of teams that are excelling in different areas. And, you know, again, to bring it all together would be the way to kind of unify everybody's success. I think Miami has done a pretty unbelievable job getting a fan base and kind of a community involved around in the area. When we have gone, our first game against Chicago, we had a group of a bunch of people, everybody young, old, and everybody in this huge blocked off part of our bleachers, and they were playing the drums, they had trumpets, we had the flares going and everything. And a lot of that is, you know, these beautiful cultures of South America and Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, and all that. They bring these kind of you watch in football, soccer games where the same thing's happening. I think we did that pretty incredibly. I'll never forget when we were playing, it was Utah, and I think this also happened in our second game against DC. But there was a bagpipe that got brought out instead of getting played in the stadium. And I'm a sucker for the bagpipe, so I got so inspired. I almost, like, it was kind of a surreal moment to be playing and have a supporting fan base, and they're bringing music to it. You know, there's a bagpipe playing. That is the coolest thing ever. I think Miami did that excellently. And then we'd have a great eat up afterwards. We'd, you know, have a beer and a burger with the fans and the other team and everything. I thought that was so cool. But again, I think Miami's done a lot well. I think I was immensely impressed in how a first year team could bring that level of professionalism that we do. But I mean, again, in terms of the league, we're a fun team, and we're a fun team to watch, and we got some really, really cool fans, and how we bring everything together, I was impressed with. I think everyone could benefit with that kind of information.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You mentioned that first game against Chicago. I, of course, was watching that game from home, you know, being involved with the organization myself and knowing a lot of the players and watching with, enthusiasm. And I remember where I was. But I also remember watching the game, and I've forgotten which owner it was. One of the three owners was in the rain with a big blanket over him, just like everybody else. Like, he was as wet, if not wetter, than the fans. And I said to myself, you know, that says something about the ownership group, that these guys care enough. They're not sitting inside. They're taking and drinking it all in, just like the fans. They're having the same experience and sharing that experience with all the fans. And that was a wonderful thing to see. So, it was really cool.
They've been in the locker room before games, giving us just soaking it in and giving a little word. They've been in locker rooms before big games, and that's awesome. Just to know that there's support even from the top. Also, I'd like to, before we move on, I'd like to kick this to you. I'd like to see what you think Miami's been doing well. Get your take on that too.
Well, I would have said, my answer would have been the same thing. I think embracing the South Beach culture, embracing the various cultures that are there, tapping into the South American vibe that's down there, because that's, I mean, let's face it, when you look at soccer around, especially on the MLS, the teams that have a really good vibe in their soccer stadiums are ones that embrace, you know, whether it's vuvuzelas or whether it's the drums or just that cultural piece that allows people to express themselves and celebrate all those guys in the field. And it doesn't just happen during the game. It starts before the game and continues afterwards. Right. So I think that's one of the big pieces. I think that one of the things the team has done a really nice job in that kind of perhaps feeds right into that is worked with Inter Miami and worked real closely with Inter Miami, you know, color scheme wise, working in the stadium. You know, you get that when you work with an organization as is somebody like Lionel Messi, with amongst their ranks, it can't help but see the professionalism and expectation rise along with it. And I think that was a key partner to continue to tap into, because that will pay dividends with the crowd, with the fans down there in Miami. It's awesome to see that. So I think that would have been my piece.
Yeah, I agree.
So and just before we move on, should you get too sunburnt or run out of sunscreen, Rick, you always have a place in Chicago, mate. The Midwest will always embrace Mavic guys back here. Don't forget that, because every Chicago Hounds game starts with bagpipes leading the boys into the stadium. I don't know if you remember that.
That was really cool. I remember running out to those bagpipes. That's another one burning in my mind. Something about the bagpipes. That's a primal war song right there.
Well, that's what happens when you're Anglo-Saxon, man. You never forget you're like, Northern.
Throw a few pipes in there, and then it's complete.
Throw
pipes,
some what?
Maybe a drum pipes. Line. There you go. Pipes? Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
There you go. Well, hey, if you get a chance to be down here, I know Pocarelli? I think it's you're nine. Who played nine for you?
Oh, Tomas Cubelli?
Yeah, Tomas Cubelli. Yeah. It was the day after the game, I think. And I saw Cubelli walking around downtown Chicago. So I don't know if he just got himself some R&R or what, but he was, and I yelled his name and waved to him and whatnot. But yeah, so if you get to spend a little time here in Chicago, have some boys take you down to the, like O'Keefe and those boys, Patty Ryan, Luke Carty, take you down to the South Side. There's the South Side Irish. It's like an actual facility, and they play hurling and they play all the other Irish games.
Awesome.
It's a ton of fun. Yeah. So it's a piece of Chicago lore right there.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. So imagine preseason camp has started. Head coach Jose Pelicana and manager Lucas Cocarelli have suggested that you help 2024 number three pick Calvin Ehrig from, the Lindenwood University.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to them. Help him adjust to life as a Shark, right? So run, pass, or kick. What would you do on the field and off the field to help him adjust to life in South Beach? You get to be a mentor. How would you do it?
I'll run with that for sure. I've talked to him already, just on the phone, just a friendly chat. And he sounds like, you know, just a really good guy. I'm excited to meet him and play along with him. And it's going to be cool to have somebody in my exact spot last year. And it's a very formative, you know, time in your life and your first season with a professional team. At least it helped me out a lot. And I'm going to do exactly what my mentors did to me. They're gonna be tough on you in practice. You know, I mean, you gotta lay into these guys a bit. That's how it treated for me. I run with the ball, and you know, you think you're a big shot from college. I didn't really think that, but you know, you run hard like you did in college, and all of a sudden, your center just blasted you, and you're on your back. And you know, you got to learn that. Not saying that's gonna help him, Calvin, but. You know, there's going to be you got to have good resistance from your teammates. You got to have them push you to make you stronger. In the line out, if you're forgetting calls, which happens, that happened to me. I forgot a few calls one day, and then the answer is always like, you know, it happens, no problem, but you got to fix that. That can't be an issue going forward here. And I love that. I love being held accountable. I loved seeing little tips from our old legends, like Dan Pryor and Nick Rigg were always doing something that, you think, oh, damn, I'd love to do that. I wonder how they did that. And then even better if they do it to you. If there's a little trick where if you get caught by something or you get smoked coming around the corner on a ball or whatever, I'll never forget those lessons. And those stick with you. But no, I'm not saying that necessarily I'm going to be gunning for him, but you got to be tough in practice. But of course, that's after talking to him and meeting him, I think he's going to be a good buddy. And I'd like to just spend time with him and talk him through my experience. I'm sure he's going to have questions, and I hope he does. But I think he's going to find that's a really enjoyable experience being the new guy there. I think he's really going to have a good time.
Yeah, I think you'll like him too, knowing Calvin, again, just having spent a bit of time with him this summer when he's playing sevens for the Bombers, and I saw him just this last weekend. You guys are cut very much from the same mold, just good people, wanting to learn, wanting to soak up everything, wanting to work hard, and really wanting to do the best by your teammates and the best by your team. I think you guys are very much cut from the same mold, if you will. So it's good to hear. I can't wait to see what you guys bring to the table in 2025. Last question is actually from one of our fans that's out there for the Rugby Rant podcast. So I want to throw this out at you. Given your size and body of work from 2024, run, pass, or kick, have any teams outside of the MLR reached out to you? Have you had any interest come your way in any way, shape, or form?
I'm going to run for it for a bit. Not going to name drop or anything here, but yeah, a lot of just local American teams have reached out on the club side and the ARP side and all. And it's a situation where it's like, I would love to play for, you know, multiple. I'd love to, you know, get all these experiences. There's a lot of really, really cool teams out there. But you know, it's how everything works out with work and everything in the off season. But yeah, they definitely have. It's really flattering when it happens, and I'm very honored to be under the radar of some of these guys. And you know, in my future, I will be playing a bunch of, you know, off season ball. So it's good to have in the back pocket, and hopefully one of these days I get some cool opportunities overseas or something, just to expand the life resume, more so the experience resume. So yeah, fingers crossed for the future.
100%. Now, on that note, I did want to ask you, you're environmental science major at Bonnie's. Are you doing something, you know, right now in the off season connection with that, or are you keeping your fingers in that part of the world at all?
Yeah, I'll run with that too. Not as much as I would like, actually. How it turns out with the amount of time I get in the off season, it's tough to engage in, you know, the real first level jobs to get into the actual careers that I'm looking at here. It's just tough with the timeline. But again, that's something I understood pursuing rugby, and I'm confident in the fact that I don't think it's going to be a major issue to take these. As anybody older than me always says, you're still very young. Yeah. To take these young days to pursue, you know, my passion of being a rugby player and being part of a team. So not as much as I, you know, would like to, but these things will happen. Right now, my plan is to keep my fingers in the pot for networks and all this networking and people I know to get some internships rolling and to get my foot in the door and get some off-season experience. But I've had some pretty good ones working environmental stewardship and all for the Medina County Parks. That was super awesome when I was in college, internshipping and all. And now I'm still working that labor. I'm still doing renovations and all, staying outside, cutting out some trees and keeping everything natural, as we say. But I'm still involved pretty heavily. But, you know, as time will come, I'll really develop in my career.
Well, that's a good mentality to have, Rick, because as I've said to Preston and my younger son, Jackson, you know, both of them, while you're young, while you have the opportunities, take in these life experiences, you know, because at some point, you know, at some point rugby will not become the priority, you know, when you decide to hang it up and you'll have a life, you'll have, you know, a significant other, perhaps you'll have kids and you won't be able to do those things and enjoy those experiences. So take your young time while you can and enjoy them, and
that's
don't
right.
be afraid to do so because these are moments you'll never get back. And the Rugby Rant, I myself, man, we appreciate you joining us tonight and giving fans an opportunity to tell us and give us some insight as to who you are and what you're all about.
Well, I really appreciate you having me. That was a lot of fun. I've seen Run, Pass, Kick before. It's cool to be a part of it now. I was a little worried when we started going quick. I wasn't sure what these questions were going to be, but no, that was awesome. I had a lot of fun.
Good. Well, like I said, I certainly enjoyed it. And again, I enjoyed it. you know, talking and speaking with somebody like yourself, just a down to earth, very, very well-adjusted individual who clearly has great parents and a great family that's guided him and helped him to this moment and being such a good steward of his relationships and his teams and his relationship with his sports, professional rugby, and of course, all the other things going on in your life. So, mate, I wish you all the best, and I can't wait to see you again in person in 2025. I know you got a lot of work in that you want to do in between now and then, but I can't wait to see what type of payoff that work brings at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. I look forward to it as well. I'm sure there'll be another game, and we'll see each other on the field afterwards or something. But yeah, it was a pleasure last year. I'm looking forward to it again.
Absolutely. And folks, thanks for sticking around. I hope you enjoyed this Run Past Kick episode with Rick Rose. I've certainly enjoyed having the opportunity to bring it to you. And again, check us out. We're going to be coming back next week with WER's one of their president and commish, and that's going to be Dr. Jessica Hammond Graff, and we're going to be talking WER and what that's professional women's rugby is going to look like in the United States in 2025. And we're going to keep coming back with these Run Past Kick episodes. Folks, don't forget to check out our YouTube page. Scott has been uploading, I mean, we have over 130 of these in the archives, and some of them have never been fully released. So go back and check them out. Got a lot of good stuff happening. And we have now added to that list with Rick Rose from the Miami Sharks. Rick, thanks a lot for joining us. Folks, thank you for sticking with us. And we will see you at the next.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.